This meeting is now being recorded.
Well, good morning, good afternoon, good evening, everyone. Welcome to the new GTLD Subsequent Procedures Subteam Track 4 IDN's Technical and Operations Call held on Monday, the 5th of February, 2018. In the interest of time, there will be no roll call. Attendance will be taken by the Adobe Connect room. If you're only on the audio bridge, would you please let yourself be known now? Hearing no names, I would like to remind all to please state your name before speaking for recording purposes, and please keep your phones and microphones on mute when not speaking to avoid any background noise. With this, I'll turn it back over to our co-leader, Cheryl Langdon Orr. Thank you.
Thank you, Julie. Cheryl Langdon Orr for the record, and Rubens and I would like to welcome you all to today's Work Track 4 call. The usual administrivia begins our day, in which case I'd like to ask, has anyone got an update to their statements of interest? Not hearing anybody make themselves known, we'll move on to the next part, and what I'd like to do is have your attention drawn to the agenda in the agenda pod. And you'll see today's call, and we can move to the next slide. Thanks, Julie. You'll see today's call's agenda is pretty much focused on reviews. We have review of the technical services suggestions. We have review of operations responses to the CQs, the qualifying questions. And we have reviews of responses for delegation rate, all of which correspondence you should have already had and been able to digest. So with that, I'd like to ask, is there anyone who has any other business that they'd like to let us know about now? And we'll ask again before the end of the call.
Thank you, Cheryl. Good time of day, everyone. Public work track for progress, we frequently asked either staff from different areas in IT organization or other advisory committees for feedback on things that we're looking for. And so we decided to take a look at what responses we got, because we usually only ask the questions but didn't dedicate much time to looking for the answers. So if you can go first to slide 5, it's about questions that we send them when your track 4 members knew of some SLA violations that were happening, and we asked technical services what could be done to improve both the registry system testing, which is mostly known as PDT, the pre-delegation testing, but RST is the acronym for the system in its full life cycle, both pre-delegation and registry service provider change systems, and some recommendations regarding evaluation. While we won't go today to the recommendations on IST on the registry system testing, because this is somewhat linked to the registry service provider discussion, so we need to sync up with either Work Track 1 or the full work group on this, on how we proceed on the RSP team. So we need first to look at what will be part or not of the RSP program, and then move on with applying this from a technical evaluation perspective to registry system testing. So we table those recommendations for now, which include all recommendations regarding RST, and one specific recommendation they mentioned regarding to RST. We also table one recommendation that mentioned about using ASEP for registry service evaluation, because we are still discussing with registry services, and that is probably best served by keeping up with that discussion. And we noticed that the only other recommendation was one recommendation that was already from the Program Implementation Review Report, which is the PIRR acronym from the slide, where they suggested moving the scoring system to be either 0-1 or 2 to only be 0-1, to only be pass or fail. And that's a recommendation that it was already accepted by Workshop Forum. I say, hey, it looks nice. It indeed was a problem. It indeed generated inconsistency. So, still put a correction in meaning of the acronym in the chat for those willing to take a look at it, but we only mention the acronym from now on. So, while these responses from technical services are somewhat pending in the past regarding registry system testing, most of them are actually already taken into account in most of our discussions, or will be taken into account. So those responses are somewhat managed. But if you go to slide 6, there is a part that we got some answers that we still have to figure out what to do about them. The questions we sent to ICANN Operation about the full text of qualification questions and the answers of those questions, four questions where the answers were published. So if an answer was public, like registry services description, which was question 23 in the 2012 rounds, we were requesting the qualification questions that were asked about that question and their responses. For the questions that are not published, like security policy, details of the system, we only asked for counts or qualification questions and answers, not the full text of those, because they were not public anyway. The first response we got, still some months ago from them, is that that information was not foreseen to be published. So there could be sensitive data in that information. While that does not really compute, because these are actually the first to publish information, so that there were some situations where there was a gray area that could apply for some of the of that content, and how a burden could be to look into all those questions and answers extract them. So those conversations led to a compromise solution that initially was believed also, hey, let's do that and that will solve everything, but it was found to be reasonably expensive. So we asked them for more options regarding the same matter, which can be seen in slide 7. They answered with 5 alternatives. So beyond the initial request and the initial answer, which will go through here in this slide 7. First alternative was to compile existing info regarding question authentication. But that was essentially what has already been done for the program implementation review report, like number of questions, number of responses, And that was already targeted as insufficient by the group. So that option wasn't looking much promising. Next, we have two options that are mostly the same, but changing only who would do something would be someone from staff perform a review of all the CTs, of all the answers, and identify which were the most likely issues that led to the CTs, what could be improved in outlining the questions. One option would be someone from staff. One option would be third-party review. That option, third-party review, was exactly that compromise solution that was mentioned in the previous slide, which is was found to be expensive. The other option mentioned by staff was to solicit recommendations from the evaluators, including the evaluation firms, and yet another option was survey of applicants about the text of those requests. But we have one problem with those two options is that since we are mostly 5 years after the initial period, most staff that most worked for evaluation or building applications are likely no longer either with the evaluation firms or with the registry. And even from those that are still in that registry or that evaluation firm, they would have little incentives to dedicate time and effort to remember that. It will already be a challenge even for a motivated person to remember that level of detail from 5 years before. Some of those could remember, but that information could also come with a little bias, because if you ask someone that answered a question in that way, was your answer comprehensible, understandable, and easy to digest, that person will likely say yes, because it's exactly that person that wrote that. So that self-review usually comes with a bias like that. So these are the options that Christian Willett, Icon VP of Operations, sent to us. And if you can go to slide 8, you can think of what ways we have forward. One would be to insist on the initial request, but just amend it a little, allowing for reduction of content that mixed public and private responses. Just to give an example of what would that be, if someone mentioned in registry service response, which was public, I will provide this and this service, and then in the financial part of the application, there were no financial resources to back that with service up. So some qualification questions were made that cross-linked public and private responses, and those could contain possibly sensitive information. What would be the amendment would be for allowing for reduction of that content. So, hey, if the question or qualifying question or answer goes into this realm, then don't give us that answer. That would require less skilled personnel to only redact what they're using that criteria instead of doing a holistic review of what was asked, what was being responded, and how people would look. It requires a really skilled and energy. We would be less skilled than that, but we'd possibly have some time and effort for them to do that. And when it's done, it would also put a burden on us, the community, to analyze that information. That would be a good number of text parts. And even though there is technology to expedite such analysis, mostly comparing similar cases, similar responses, which would probably be the case since most of the classification questions were repeated as an audience, and the answers were generally repeated as well. So that could save us a little time, but we still could have a lot of things to do. Other way forward would be to either ask for the staff review of the classification questions or the third party review, or to ask one of the two, no matter what, and put that as a requirement prior to implementation of the policy we are developing now. So that information wouldn't be available at policy development time, which is now, but we would condition launch of new procedure to that information being available to those working on whatever would be the community group overseeing the implementation of subsequent procedure. Or you could combine any of the options, either the first option, let's call it option zero, or any of the five options that operations gave us, and find a way forward into that. One message to the list suggested that we combined option one and option five. Option one is compiling existing information questions, and option five was the survey of applicants. And it can likely combine every other alternative. Those of us looking into GDPR possible models have already started doing a lot of mix and match of options, somewhat less options than those. So, does anyone have a suggestion for a possible way forward, combining either one of those options or something completely new? No takers. Is this maybe too late in some timelines? While people talk or think, one thing to note is that not having the clarification questions and answers does not preclude us to work on issues that we could extract from the program implementation review report, like the 0-1-2 scoring, like the issue with question 30B, which was the detailed security policy, or in in the financial evaluation, which seems to be in agreement that it should be a complete overhaul, and are doing that. So it has no use to go into detailed clarification questions of something that we probably revise from scratch. Just asking if you could find the options, that's exactly is like 7. This number 1 to 5 matches exactly our response from Christine Willick, so it's the same order and the same numbering of suggestions, so left previously mentioned combining 1 to 4, 1 and 5. Jeff, are you available on audio to explain more details of the idea of mixing 1 and 5? Please go ahead, Jeff.
Yeah, thanks. Hopefully you guys can hear me. Yeah, so when this came in, getting a lot of feedback, sorry. When this came in, I had recommended 1 and 5 because I thought that just in the previous conversations with the ICANN staff and how hard it is to go through the budgeting process to get additional funds, I didn't think 3 and 4 were good. And 2 seemed to say that it would cost, there'd be a huge amount of staff involvement and a high level of expertise, so it didn't seem like they were too positive on the feasibility of doing that. So to me, a combination of 1, which was just, you know, sharing, compiling and sharing the existing information on the advisories, the CQs, application questions, et cetera, and the survey of applicants to get feedback seemed to me to be the least intrusive.
Thanks, Jeff. Any other suggestions from any other preference between suggestions already on the slide, suggestions made by Jeff, or Maxi, please go ahead.
Maxi Malzoba, for the record. I suggest slightly change the name of the topic of 5. So it's survey of new registries, because many now existing registries used services of some consulting companies, and basically some of those companies do not exist, some do not have any kind of relationship with the new registries, and staff of those registries were heavily involved in the process. So I think we'd better ask registries than applicants. Thanks.
Thanks, Maxim. Just answer one of your points a bit in the chat regarding reachability, because that would seem to whether the emails are, if the people don't answer, they don't answer, it just makes the data set smaller. Steve, you have Karen, please go ahead.
Thanks, Ruben. This is Steve Chan from staff. And so a possible other way to go about this is to indeed ask, or I guess select a couple of options or whatever they might be amongst the 5 of those. But perhaps in addition, and because it's not mutually exclusive, the option or the bullet you have on slide 8 about requesting that during implementation additional studies might be needed, so like the staff review or the third-party review, that could be an additional recommendation regarding this work. So you could do some analysis as a working group, but that wouldn't preclude you in the future from asking that ICANN org do additional work during implementation. Hopefully that makes sense. Thanks.
Thanks, Steve. There's one question from Kurt from the chat that I'd like to answer. What policy question are we trying to answer by reading the CQs? Well, what we have been doing in evaluation was to go from back to front and see if the evaluation fulfilled the principles regarding evaluation, and if there is any policy change that is needed regarding evaluation. So we don't have yet what is the policy question, because we are actually trying to know which problems need policy decisions. So there is no way to figure out yet what would be the policy question, because that was trying to be figured out from the outcome of the 2012 round. Since we have no other commentaries on this, we can move along and later see what we can produce. If someone wants to go back to the topic, please ask us to do so and we do. Next in our agenda, we have the comments on routine scheduling. We send those comments to a myriad of advisory committees and different areas inside ICANN organization. And if you go to slide 10, you can see a combined response we got from the ICANN organization, both covering both DDD and OCTO, both Global Dimension Division and Office of the CTO. Most of the response from IT organization covered application processing units and not room scaling itself. So they almost fell into the trap that we have started to solve, which is not tying one to the other, because that was the problem in the first round, would be speculating about the application process unit and then taking a routine scaling decision from those units. But their response was included something very relevant, that there is an increasing use of routine in the application to DNS recursive resolvers. What does that mean is that the dependence on the root-to-zoom server system is decreasing, because more and more recursive resolvers are downloading the root-to-zoom directly from the root-to-zoom authority, which is IANA, and using that root-to-zoom without going to the root-to-zoom server system. That is being done to increase scalability and to minimize information leakage. But these two things end up allowing the user system to scale better. And the large recursive farms that usually employ this technology, like Google recursive servers, Cisco Umbrella recursive servers, can be increasingly by end users. A good number of end users in portions of the world have been changing their DNS servers to those global recursive DNS servers because of intermittent failures with the local ISP server or something like that. And while ICANN organization didn't mention, there is also one factor that will increase with server scalability, which is DNS query minimization. Currently, when someone asks for a non-existing domain, as a non-existing TLD, only that information is cached. So information about that existing, non-existing TLD is not replicated. But that is being changed, not to the root server scaling purpose, but to reduce information leakage. Like if you want a .com domain, you only ask where are the main servers for .com, and not where are the main servers for the specific domain.com. So that is changing the DNS landscape towards less dependence on the root server system. So that's information based our decisions into. Organization also mentioned that determining that scaling capacity would require significant effort, and that effort would be worthwhile because application process limitations will likely be reached before that's an issue. So it's somewhat a repetition of what already got us into the equivalent problem. And we also have mentioned, Kevin responded to the root room size question, which is different from the root room change rate or delegation per time period question, but we haven't answered that question. If you can go to slide 11, we have at slide 11 what was answered by ESSEC, from a higher perspective. They mentioned that ICANN should continue developing the monitoring and rewarding capability with respect to recent scaling. They mentioned that ICANN should focus on the rate of change rather than number of delegated strings for a given calendar year, that it should structure its obligations to need to be registered so that it can delay their addition to the routes in case of DNS service instabilities, and that they should investigate and catalog the long-term obligations of maintaining a larger root zone. And I, for this part, I mentioned one of the specifics they added to this is that the ongoing management of these activities should be investigated prior to increasing the number of delegations in the root zone. So they actually put a hard stop on the new GTLG program with that advice. If followed. So, if you could look at slide 12, which has the recommendations from the RSEC, the Root Service Security Advisory Committee, they confirmed deployment of the Root Zone System Monitoring. So, they confirmed one of the asks of RSEC and mostly on the community. Regarding implementation of the root zone system, they confirm that it's deployed now and continually being evolved. They suggest adopting a monthly rate instead of anything that would be yearly, per annum, etc. And they recommended a specific growth rate target, which was 5% per month in growth of the root zone. Note that this is 5% of the at then current region size. So it actually is a growing number of per month delegations, not a fixed, let's say, X amount of PLDs per month or per week. And they also mentioned that that's a target, not a hard ceiling. They even included in their response data showing that the growth, the root zone have grown like 14% sometimes during the new GTLG, this round of the new GTLG program. So that's more of a target, not a, oh, we only can do that much. That's mostly general guidance. They have a strong recommendation on keeping allowed DNS records at room zone to a minimum, which is exactly as it is now. So you only get some very limited records across the delegation and the delegation be effectively successful. They also suggested as effective possibility of delaying or removing delegations that cause instability. They actually responded on Zoom size, but they are more concerned of possible TLDs become as popular as CONNECT org, the legacy GTLDs, then it's room size. So that might have a distant correlation. They say the more TLDs you have, the more chance you have of one being extremely successful. But we are more concerned with that is room size. And they have some very curious, non-technical questions that already referred to the full work group, like if flattening the NF space doesn't repeat the cognitive abilities of users to recognize TLDs and domain name in general. But I will refrain from discussing those questions in WorkTrack 4, the question more correctly tailored to the full working group. Maxine has been waiting, so let us go to Maxine before going ahead.
Maxim Alzoba, I'd like to ask a question. What was the justification for 5%? Because it could be 7 or 10, and without, like, scientifically proven method of saying, yes, it should not be more than 5, it's just, like, taken out of thin air. It means nothing, basically. Thanks. We need to understand if there is a background proof that 5% is something safe, or if not, then we don't have to take it into account.
Thanks, Maxim. Just to mention that they have some reasoning in their response in format of an appendix of that 5% that was not, I would call it a truly scientific reasoning from point A to point B and justifying all steps in between. But they had some reasoning that people could refer to about their suggestion on why they are suggesting growth rates to be 5%. Answering Jeff's question in the chat, yes, that we were mentioning routine growth rate, not TLDs. So any action that increases the routine would have impact on that. And there are some day-to-day issues that increase the size of the routine, like adding the NSX for TLDs that don't have them. Mostly some CTLDs still don't have them. Adding IPv6 addresses to main servers that currently don't have them also takes a bit of the routine growth. So it would possibly apply to not only TLDs, but to larger number of use cases. Let us go to slide 13 then and discuss some of the issues. In slide 13, we have compiled what recommendations are either compatible with each other or compatible with GNSO policies. So monitoring early warning of the routine system is not incompatible with any GNSO policy. Delaying or removing delegations that call instability is also not incompatible. There is even a GNSO principle regarding GNSO problems that really shouldn't cause instability. So that goes right with that. Both RSEC and RSEC focus more on change rates over smaller time periods than annual figures. The 5% monthly growth rate from RSEC doesn't have an objection either the other recommendation or the current policy. ASAC suggested to maintain a conservative approach to the NSFAC in routine or also compatible with many other recommendations from other bodies. So the question is, there any disagreement from WorkTrack 4 on E5? And considering what I read in the chat, I believe this 5% monthly growth rate is likely one shown not to be popular with WorkTrack 4. But besides the 5% monthly growth rate, anyone have any issue with the other recommendations that are supposedly compatible with each other? And that was somewhat expected. Most of, besides the monthly growth rate target, mostly actually best practice in managing a complex system, in managing a distributed system that is not under control of a single organization. So if you can go to slide 14, you can then move back later to the 5% issue because it will show up here in slide 14 as well. In slide 14, compile the recommendation that incompatible either with each other, within each other or among each other, and or with the NSO policy. One is the recommendation of I can argue to not decline delegation reach criteria, since that the application process limit would already prevent any problem with the Hutchinson system. And while both ASAC and ASAC prescribed having a delegation reach criteria, the only difference between ASAC and RSAC that RSEC actually went into defining a growth rate target. And RSEC didn't went into that. So while people think on that question, we'll go to Cheryl. Please go ahead, Cheryl.
Thank you, Rubens. Cheryl, for the record. I'm trying not to bring in any perceived biases here because clearly there is a great desire to not limit to the recommended 5% growth monthly growth rate as proposed by the ASAC, etc. But I just felt I needed to play devil's advocate here, so forgive me. Yes, and particularly to Maxim's point in chat, yes, these are purely opinions, not based on research because they haven't delegated more. Therefore, we don't know yet. But they are conservative, and I would expect them to be conservative. And from a risk management perspective, that is not necessarily a bad thing. The consequences of critical incidents need to also be considered. So we probably haven't found the sweet spot, and certainly one that is satisfying the WorkTrack 4 participants. But this seems to me that we should be flagging this point, the 5% monthly growth rate proposal, as something to discuss further. And to that end, I wondered, Rubens, if it mightn't be a good idea if perhaps we take the opportunity, even if it is as late as ICANN 61, to discuss hopefully even face-to-face with a representative of two of both ASAC and ESAC, just on this particular issue, and our WorkTrack 4 members who are available could perhaps join us at that, because they're valid points, they're valid questions, but I also understand why a conservative risk management approach might also be taken. Thank you.
Thanks, Cheryl. Just like to comment on some bits of the discussion. One is that the ISAC is suggesting a 5% growth rate from now on. So we couldn't apply that for the startup of the 2012 program, because that would make the 2012 program take a really long time. But they are mentioning a number they believe would be safe for the current starting point. So we can do some math regarding how would it take it to delegate X amount of CLDs from subsequent procedures. But that data even they even list that we already have growth rate like 15%, 15% per month. So they are not saying that, oh, this is should this is a safe level or not. So they are leveling that as a target and letting us think what we think of that. Also, one of the at least one of the good ideas of what they proposed is that they are actually focusing on growth rate. So they are know that this is cumulative, that if you do something by X percent, it will go larger than the linear scale of multiplying the period by the rate. So that's possibly something that's a good thinking. Perhaps the number is a bit conservative, and Cheryl mentioned reasons for being conservative. But the idea of growth rate is possibly something that is worthwhile thinking, and possibly worthwhile measuring as well. We haven't measured that during the deployment of the 2012 round, and that was possibly something that could have been done. So, from the chat, it seems that we are not possibly going much further in this discussion, so let's move to our AOB agenda. And so let's go back to Cheryl. Please go ahead, Cheryl. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ruben. Cheryl, off the record. I'm happy to take any other business, but Rubens and I did want to raise your awareness of the decision at the public board meeting yesterday regarding .corp, .home and .mail. For the record, we haven't, I believe Steve hasn't been able to get the text copy of the resolution, but we will distribute it as soon as humanly possible. The resolution yesterday put an outcome that was that those names are not to be delegated, and that the $185,000 application fees to applicants were to be returned from the new GTLD bucket of money, and that obviously that itself. Is something we need to note in our reporting, as well as, of course, the planned ESSAC review. So the risk of name collisions was recognised as something that further work is going to need to be done on in the resolution, but I thought it was important, and Rivens and I agree it was important for us to note that the names will not be delegated, will not be assumed, therefore, to be delegated in a next round unless the outcomes of the work that is planned makes a different recommendation. So just an awareness-raising exercise in terms of any other business, and as I said, as soon as Steve can get hard copy or text out of the system for the exact wording of the resolution, we will share it around. Is there any other business from anyone? Jeff, over to you.
Yeah, thanks. Can I just make sure that we're, sorry, not on the corp stuff, but home or email. On the RSAC paper, can we all get clear as to what the 5% meant? I think it's 5% per month, cumulative, it's on page 7 of the RSAC report. But Cheryl, you and Maxim thought it was 5% of the original number. That wouldn't be the growth that's shown on page 7.
No, I didn't believe it was from the original amount. I'm sorry. It was a from now on. So there would have been a cumulative effect. But let's get it clear. It's not it's able to be read in more than one way. So let's take an action item to ask that, dare I say, qualifying question.
Yeah, okay. I just wanted to make sure that, because it seemed like some people weren't on the same page. But
yep.
All right, cool.
If it can be interpreted two ways. If it can be interpreted two ways, Cheryl, for the record, then indeed we should definitely ask the authors exactly what they meant. Maxime, I see your hand up. Over to you.
Maxime, also for the record. Actually, I have my scientific background, and I'm saying that they're using the wrong curve on the figure 4 of the report, because they're trying to apply exponential growth where we do not see any proof that the system is can withstand exponential growth. Anyway, using this method, you can add any digit, actually. So it's not very scientific to say that 5,000 could be drawn from that figure. But basically, no mathematical justification, just pictures. It's not a proper way to say that it's the number we derive from these sets of data.
Okay, Maxime, Cheryl, for the record, and I know Krista in chat is supporting you there. We will ask for this to be qualified. So that's an action item. Perhaps, Steve, you can make a note of that, and we can ask you to get back via with Jeff and I to ask the authors to reiterate the meaning in non-ambiguous terms. Is there any other business before we come to the closing of our call? Steve, yes, you've got your hand up. Sorry, I didn't see you. I have no idea how long you were there. I was looking down in the chat. Over to you, Steve.
Thanks, Cheryl. This is Steve. It was probably about 3 seconds, so you're on top of things.
Phew.
So just a couple of maybe next steps or takeaways from this call. It wasn't immediately clear to staff if there was any tentative agreements reached on what approach we might want to take for the CQ options. It seemed like there's support for option one, but then there's some ambiguity, I think, on what else might be done. There seemed to be some support for the surveys, but then there's a timing element, too, whether or not that should be done now and or perhaps during implementation. So I was just wondering if we might have some at least tentative takeaways that we might want to take to the list to further discuss. And then actually one other just question, maybe I might have missed it, regarding the growth rate question. I was curious if the work track had some general agreement on the establishment of a growth rate being imposed, or if it's about the 5% exact figure, or both. Like I said, I might have missed it, but I was just hopefully maybe someone could articulate that point. Thanks.
Thanks, Steve. I see Jeff's hand up. Over to you, Jeff.
Thanks. On the first point, Steve, I think we should get started with option one right away, because I think we all agreed that was a good start, and I think we've already kind of, we're a number of months behind on that just because we were trying to figure out what our options were. The sooner we get an idea of starting option one and how to move forward with that, the better. And then option five, let's start mapping out the types of questions we think we could ask in a survey, and then go on from there. And then we can figure out when to ask those questions. But I don't think we should delay on option one.
Thanks, Jeff. Cheryl, for the record. Certainly that's in keeping with my understanding from the discussions in the call, that option one seemed to have fairly wholesale support. There were some questions with five in terms of who to ask it to, and whether or not the survey two would draw what was wanted, but then careful survey design can solve that. So it looks like option one is a priority, with option five as a prepare and possible follow-up. And of course, something like option five could also be picked up in our recommendations along the lines of future work is required. Regarding the rate, limitations on rate, I heard no clear disagreement that those that actually do the work's opinion should be ignored on the fact that some sort of limitations, even if they are human resource ones, will exist, but that there was an inability to understand what exactly was meant with the 5%, and that's why we need a qualifying question to be asked on that. We need an explanation that is absolutely unambiguous and cannot be interpreted in more than one way on the percentage that was being recommended before we can take that discussion further. Rubens, does that fit with your understanding?
Yep, thank you much, Sharon.
Okay, well, with that, and we are coming towards the top of the hour, is there anything anyone wants to raise before I ask staff to tell me when the next meeting is, because it's not in my calendar yet? If there's no other business, no other points wanting to be raised, then please help me, staff. When's our next meeting? Fantastic. It's Julie comes to the rescue again, the 12th of February, which is next week, and it is at 1500 UTC for a 60-minute call. And with that, I want to thank you one and all, and talk to you next week. Bye for now.
Great. Thanks, everyone, for joining today's meetings and terms. You can disconnect your lines. Have a good rest of the day.